I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure for cancer. Online at www.umgcc.org. Or for more information, you can call 1-800-888-8823. We're joined in the studio now by a really interesting group of people. We had an email the other day from the American Civil Liberties Union about a project they're working on, a group of students who went to Capitol Hill, a group of students who are working on talking about and photographing the conditions that our Baltimore City schools are in, their physical condition, the physical plant of those schools. And it's something that I know one of our guests, Frank Pazzanella, who is an education advocate for the ACLU here in Maryland, has been working on for a long time. That's his job there. And he's been working on this particular issue for a long time. I think maybe he might have, we'll find out, a school administrator who actually wants to get something done about that, and we'll talk about that as well. The students all are students of the Baltimore Freedom Academy, and once again, the executive director of that Freedom Academy, Kalila Harris, is here in the studio. Kalila, good to see you, too, always.
You?
Always. And the three of the students involved in this project, Brandon Stevenson, who is a freshman at Baltimore Freedom Academy, Morgan Turner-Cohen, who is a sophomore, and Josiah Richardson, who's also a sophomore. You can't see them all waving V's and smiling, but they are. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to Facebook and throw your comments up there as well. So let's talk a bit about this project. I guess Frank is a good place to start, because you've been working in this issue of the physical plan of our schools, and as a major issue that is often ignored. And as way of introduction, I think when we first met, I told you a story about when I went to speak to a group of students at Douglas High School about 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago. It was a while back. And I was in there talking about some very serious issues that we were having a show about. And I remember I was sitting on a windowsill, and I looked over my shoulder out the window and saw the tennis courts at Douglas Senior High. And they were just overgrown, and plants growing out of cracks, and there's nothing there. It was just like a slum instead of a tennis court. And I just earlier that day left Gilman School, with their shining tennis courts where kids go play every day, and well kept, and going, something's wrong here. Mm-hmm. What would I think if I was a student and looked out my window and saw that every day? Frank Panatella.
Well,
Pazzanella, excuse
yes,
me.
Pazzanella. We usually, the ACLU has an education reform project, and our work is basically rooted in the court case Bradford versus the state of Maryland, which addresses the operational dollars for city schools, and in the outcome was the Thornton legislation, which is providing more and adequate funding, hopefully, for city schools, which we're seeing a big, significant academic gain among city students. But now we're working on school facilities, which wasn't part of the lawsuit.
It's not part of the lawsuit.
Right. And we believe that under the state's constitutional mandate of providing a thorough and efficient education to students statewide, school facilities must be safe, healthy, and support modern academic programming so that students are prepared for college in the 21st century global workforce. And as you know, the schools are in really poor condition. 80% of schools in the city are rated in poor condition. And mostly we were advocating for more local and state funding, capital funding for school infrastructure in Baltimore City. And that's what we've been doing over the recent years. But this particular exhibition is a national effort put together by the Healthy Schools Campaign, the 21st Century School Fund, and Critical Exposure.
Mm-hmm. And what's Critical Exposure?
They're an arts organization. And they work with students and youth and other nonprofit organizations to take photographs of social injustices and present them in various ways to advocate for change. This particular project, they teamed up with the 21st Century School Fund and the Healthy Schools Campaign to show the conditions of school facilities nationwide. And basically students, teachers, education advocates, community members, whoever could take pictures of local schools in their district and submit them on a website and provide a caption. And out of those photos, they were going to select 20 photos to be blown up and displayed in the Senate Rotunda. And that's what happened on Monday night. And two of our photos were selected for the exhibit.
So let's talk about that. Kalila Harrison, I'll introduce you and the students who are with you, Morgan Turner-Cohen, Josiah Richardson, and Brandon Stevenson. Talk about how Baltimore Freedom Academy got into this. I want to hear from the students as well.
Well, as you already know, Baltimore Freedom Academy's mission centers around preparing young people who can immediately participate in transforming their communities. And Frank, well aware of that, came to us and thought our students would want to take part in preparing for this photo exhibit and getting some submissions in. And our students, of course, jumped at the opportunity to get their voices heard. And this group of students, in addition to another young lady, Brianna Wells, really thought through what their facility looked like and what it meant to their own education and how a quality facility impacts education overall, and that's something that they have been passionate about, mm-hmm. have been working on, have been thinking through other ways to really get this on people's radars as a part of the civil rights issue of education. It's incorporated in that whole issue of having a quality facility.
I'd like to hear some students we have with us. Morgan, I'll start with you. I mean, I if you don't mind, I'm curious why all of you think this, A, is a civil rights issue, but what I'd like to first talk about is what are you involved in? Why are you involved in this?
We're involved in See Through Your Lens because it actually helps you it helps other people understand where we're coming from, like how we complain about what we don't have and how Digital Harbor has more than what one school has. And it's hard to focus on one thing if you have nothing but complaints by the students, and then you see it every day, so it's like you don't want to be at school. You're not involved in anything because you think because our school is crappy, because you see on the outside crap, but you read on paper it's the wonderful thing in the world. And that's
Brandon.
Well, I'm involved because I was worried and I cared for the school and how it looked.
Your school?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was across the news how Freedom Academy made the top 6 best schools in Baltimore City. And I came and I've seen how bad it looked on the inside, but it looked nice on the outside. So I joined Mr. Pat, Nella, Morgan, and Josiah to help raise money for the school to make it look better and present and represent where it stands as the top 6 schools.
Josiah?
Well, I got involved with the project because I'm a photographer. I love taking pictures, and I felt as though the needs of our school are not met.
Mm-hmm.
There are our facilities in our school are very, very corrupted and horrible to work with. There are consistent complaints, as Morgan said, and just like Morgan said, those complaints make it very, very hard to concentrate and learn what you're trying to learn for the day. And so this affects me because I'm a chronic asthmatic. And in the summertime, it's unbearably hot. And in the wintertime, it's dangerously cold. And so it's hard for me to concentrate and get focused on what I need to do if I can't, there's not a healthy environment for me. And so I got involved in it so that people would know what we were going through instead of just listening to what we were saying and not actually seeing what we were talking about. I wanted to let the world know what Baltimore City Public Schools are going through. The money issues, the health issues now, and all of that affects our education as students.
I'd like to hear what our listeners think. If you want to join us at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Just what you think, maybe the condition of your own schools, condition of the schools that your children go to, conditions of the schools you teach in, the physical conditions of those schools, and how it affects your lives and how you think it affects education. And so let's talk a bit about why this is a civil rights issue. Some might think, oh, this is a word that's way overdone. So what do we mean that the physical plant, the condition of the physical plant of a school is a civil rights issue? What does that mean?
Well, you know,
Khalila.
We have young people who are going to schools and facilities that don't necessarily reflect the value placed that should be placed on education. It is the one thing that cannot be taken away from our children, their education. And if we don't place a value on it by putting them in a facility that is conducive to learning, then ultimately we are infringing on their civil right to that education.
But if your students are doing so well, I mean, somebody says, oh, well, look, Khalila, your school may be in shambles internally, physically. Windows don't work right. The air conditioning doesn't work right. It's, you know, that all kinds of things are falling apart, but your kids are doing well.
Well, I think the young people can speak to the fact that this is not just about the Baltimore Freedom Academy. I mean, this funding should, when Frank talks about 80% of the facilities in Baltimore City being rated poorly, all children deserve to be in a quality education program, and that is inclusive of a quality facility. And we feel like we could do so much more with our students if they were not worried about having an asthma attack. And we have an extended school year for our ninth grade. So our ninth graders were in school since July 6th this year, not since August 31st. But they had a bear with heat that was many times unbearable. And, you know, the whole point of having them there for an extended year is to really attack their education and prepare them for college and the workforce or military. And it's very difficult, and I'll let them speak to that, you know, how hard it is to concentrate on the task at hand, which is their full-time job, their education. And that's citywide. That's not just about Baltimore Freedom Academy.
Who wants to grab that one first? Which one of the students?
Well,
Brandon, go ahead.
I had
Brandon
something
Stevenson.
To say about the school since July 6th.
That's because you're a freshman.
Yes.
So this is right.
I was one of the ninth graders there, mm-hmm. and Ms. Harris was right about attacking the education and the grades, make them better for the starting year. And because of how the heat was, and I too am a chronic asthmatic, and I suffer through frequent migraines because of heat and stuff like that. And, like, my grades have gotten nowhere because of it, because I had to constantly miss school because either I had a migraine from the heat or I had trouble breathing. And then I'm hearing news about how cold the school gets during the winter, and that's where my asthma really kicks up, so it's going to be kind of hard this year.
And that's, you know, that's a security issue. We by no means are a school that believes in a culture where you have metal detectors, because mm-hmm. that's a false sense of security. And when you have metal detectors, that also sends a sign about the state of your education. And so we do not allow students to wear coats in the classrooms. But if the boiler is out and it's freezing cold, it's kind of hard to say to someone, you can't wear your coat in the classroom.
Does your boiler go out a lot?
Well, we have one that is old and in disrepair, and our building was on the list of schools that were slated to close altogether. And so there was not an investment made in purchasing a new boiler for the building. So it has two. One is in a constant state of disrepair, so there is uneven heating in the winter. Some parts of the building are fairly hot, and other parts of the building have no heat at all.
And I hear that consistently from talking to different teachers.
Let me get a little closer to you.
Okay. I hear that consistently from talking to teachers citywide, students citywide, about how the heat is not distributed evenly throughout the school. So mm-hmm. some classrooms are boiling hot in the winter, and they have to open the windows. And mm-hmm. sometimes the windows don't even open, and they're broken. Right. And other times the classroom is too cold, and children are writing in winter coats and shivering, and, you know, obviously that affects concentration and learning. And there's a lot of research that has been done on school facilities over the recent years, and studies have shown that the condition of facilities affects grades. It impacts achievement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, poor lighting, limited natural light, heat and air conditioning, human comfort, and just a school facility in severe disrepair sends the message that your education's not valued, and it really has an effect of making students apathetic, not feeling like they're valued in school, and altogether we see there is lower achievement. correlated with poor facility conditions. Also, it affects teacher retention. Teachers want to be in a good environment. They mm-hmm. want to be comfortable. I know coworkers of mine, I know other people, if the air conditions out in the summer, most of them aren't going to go to work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the director of the organization will say, no air condition, work from home, take your work home. But that doesn't happen in city schools. And teachers, I personally believe, is the most important job that we have in this country, should have adequate working conditions. And students should have the same.
So what you all did as students, you ended up doing this photography project, right?
Yes.
And tell me what you did with this photography project. Tell me about it.
To me, I think it had us have a standpoint to show you that in class you feel like you're in jail. You have bars everywhere. It's like you have no light. And you have light, but it's not a light that you want. You feel like you're in jail. You constantly have your feet on the ground, but yet you have to crisscross your legs onto a small chair where, therefore, your feet are not shot by electrical problems on the floor. Then you have your desk to do 360s, but you put your books on it, it swings all the way around. And your chair that does a 9 angle that you swivel around. It's like you can't be focused when things are broken around the classroom. And then you have your lockers that jam, you have to fight with. And then you have, you constantly have to watch your back, but watch what you're doing in the classroom or in the hallways or in the locker rooms when you feel like you're a prisoner. Like, you can't get cleaned up after you have a long day at gym. You have to run down the hallway to find a empty locker, stuff your stuff in that locker, put your uniform on, and run to a classroom to make sure you're on time. And to me, that's a problem where I can't feel like I'm fresh and I can't focus because I'm sticky and I'm hot and I'm sweaty. And I have to constantly, make sure no one smells my funky armpits while I'm raising my hand.
Our lockers are in disrepair. They're not able to use our lockers.
Locker rooms.
Mm-hmm. And you have to jam your binder inside of locker. Like, you have to fiddle with your binder to get out. And that's how, I don't have to have a Digital Harbor locker or a Digital Harbor school. I just want things to be fixed for the point where I can be able to function with.
Were you about to say something? A minute ago, I thought you were. No, you sure? All right.
You know, part of the issue in the city is that you have buildings that were built in the 60s, part of the Carnegie movement, big box, 2,000 kids in a building. And so when they talk about the lockers with their binders that don't fit, these are tiny little lockers, and I don't know who they were made for, but they weren't made for high school students or middle
books.
School students or books, for that matter.
I didn't believe it until Morgan showed me that her book didn't fit. She had to – it was like a Jenga piece or something where she had to twist it several different ways to get it out or in.
But what do you expect this photography exhibit that's taking place in the rotunda in Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., that the senators and others passed through will do? I mean, what do you want it to do?
Well, there's federal legislation being considered now by the House. Well, the House passed their bill, and it allocates, I believe, somewhere around $700 million to school facilities, which will be distributed among the different states and districts. The Senate is currently working on their corresponding bill, but that we haven't seen the details of. So the purpose of the exhibition was to bring attention to this issue. And recently, with the federal stimulus money, the item for school facility infrastructure was completely removed. $16 billion was in the Senate bill. And in committee, there were a couple senators that didn't let that bill out of committee until they removed the school infrastructure item. So we're trying to with this
specific.
You know
who those senators were?
One was from Maine, I believe, Senator Collins. Uh-huh. But we mostly work on local and state issues.
No, I was just curious. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah. we got involved with the federal issue because we saw it as a big opportunity, and we work very closely with the school system, and they're doing a really impressive job with the funds that they have.
Mm-hmm. So what would it cost to bring the schools in Baltimore City up to par?
Well, for our own building, we have a quote of $33 million. And that is one building. And actually, it would be cheaper to knock our building down and to build
something
a new,
new
facility. Mm-hmm. The building has decent bones, but the electrical systems, the locker rooms, deplorable, the lockers, deplorable, the doors have not been replaced for now almost 50 years. There are just so many things that need to be repaired. And likewise, the windows, to replace all of the windows, that's about a $2 million project. There's no air conditioning. That can go anywhere from $3 to $5 million. So, you know, the building doesn't have enough electrical capacity to just put air conditioners in the windows. So it just snowballs.
I mean, I've been in your building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an old building.
Old building.
Go ahead, Frank.
We're not the only one, though.
No, right, mm-hmm. right.
Well, the city's master plan, the city schools facilities master plan, states that $2.7 billion is needed. They're looking at a more short-term...
For the city?
Yes, the city schools, Baltimore City Public Schools master plan. They did a comprehensive assessment of their facilities, and they basically said to comprehensively modernize all school facilities, $2.7 billion is needed. They're looking at a more short-term plan now, but in talking to... school officials, that $2.7 billion figure is very real.
Are we going to say something?
I believe that it's probably a low ball number, $2.7 billion, because the type of repair that needs to be done, and with the good works of schools and charter schools and bringing innovative programs and bringing children back to the city, you have buildings that are needing to be repaired. You have, for the first time, an upswing in enrollment. And so this is going to become a greater issue over the next 5, 10, 15 years. So
we're talking about the conditions that our schools are in, the physical plants of our schools that are dilapidated in many Baltimore City schools because they're very old buildings, and it's the same thing across America. And our students from Baltimore City and Baltimore Freedom Academy are part of a photographic exposition now at the Rotunda in Washington, D.C., in the U.S. Capitol. And two of the photographs for...
It's in the Senate building, the Russell...
Isn't that where the Rotunda is?
Rotunda.
Yeah,
right.
So I didn't... Okay, right. Senate office building.
I didn't know if there were many rotundas.
No, there actually are more than one rotunda. You're right. I'm sorry. And two of the photographs from the Baltimore Freedom Academy students are in that exhibit from students around the country who are... talking about these same issues, except here in Baltimore, students of Baltimore Freedom Academy are deeply involved in social issues in our community and their school and are doing this work through the students who are with us, Brandon Stevenson, Josiah Richardson, and Morgan Turner Cohen, as is their principal, Khalila Harris, and Frank Patanello, who is the education advocate for the American Civil Liberties Union, which bringing a lawsuit in this case, right?
No, this is not a lawsuit. Advocacy work, yes.
Okay.
Bradford versus the state of Maryland had to do with adequate funding, operational funding for city schools so that they can compete with the other districts
but
that have a lot of money.
But this is not included in that lawsuit.
That was not included. I want to be clear about that. We're working right now to advocate for more state and local funding, and if you know the opportunity exists for more federal funding, of course we're going to advocate for it, and that's what we're going for now, a legislative approach.
I'm curious, in the time we have left, I'm just this from the students. I mean, what does it say to you and your peers and friends maybe in other schools that you walk into schools that are in such dilapidated conditions compared to maybe schools you might see in Montgomery County and some other schools that are in fairly decent shape? I mean, what does it say to you all about yourselves and what's being said to you by this world that we live in?
Well,
don't be shy. I knew Brandon was going to speak up. Go.
Well, I think what it says to me is, like, out of every single school I've been through,
mm-hmm.
it seems like I've just been going to the same school over and over again. Because even though, like, my middle school from elementary to now, my school has been looking exactly like that. Like, now Brimstone Elementary, it was bad, but it's been improved. And, like, my middle school, it looks almost exactly like Freedom does now, except it's, like, Freedom has a little more things bad, like, a little worse than the middle school does. Like, we're missing lights. Some of the pieces of ceiling has, like, fallen off. Lockers are hanging out. And, like, some teachers have air conditioners in there that don't even work. Like, the inner pieces is gone.
And I saw the door, the window being jammed open in one of the pictures just to get air in and make kind of jerry-rig a way to get air into the mm-hmm. into the classroom. There's another picture that you all took, which is a pretty devastating picture. where there's a soap cleaner to the right-hand side over a sink, and over the sink is a sign nailed into the wall saying, do not drink, hand washing only.
Lead is a major problem. So none of the water fountains in the building are turned on. They're all off. We use bottled water. So drinking from the water, much less taking a shower if the locker rooms were actually workable, I don't know how feasible that would be.
So Morgan, you were talking about the lockers. I'm curious the question I just asked, and Brandon took a stab at it as well. What is saying to you about what you think the people who run this government think about y'all?
I really think that they care more about certain schools than others. Since we're a brand new school, like Baltimore Freedom Academy, I think that they take more shots at Poly and Western because they're been up longer than Baltimore Freedom Academy. Since we're just a fresh school, they just look out the outer appearance. It don't really look at the statement what Baltimore Freedom Academy really stands for. It's like, it's different. They see another, they don't look at the heart of the school. They just look at the outer appearance as in Poly, see how it's grand, it's big, it's rebuilt, it's remodeled. How we don't, even though all the things we do, we push forward, we constantly do what we wish that we shouldn't do and hope that we go home for. But it's like you constantly do it regardless.
Well, this has been... You want to have a closing thought, Josiah? You have to give us about 30 seconds. Don't worry.
Looking at like schools like Montgomery and Roland Park, I've been to Roland Park. I haven't attended there, but I've been there, and the school was absolutely fabulous. There was...
Roland Park Elementary Middle, you're talking about on Roland Avenue.
I think, right? Yes.
Yeah. Or do you mean Roland Park Country School?
Yes, that one.
The private school across the street. Right, right, right.
Fabulous building. Fabulous everything. It was... I didn't know it was a private school until just now, but I thought it was public. And seeing that and looking back at my school, it just makes me kind of embarrassed because...
And angry?
Right, because... I can't go to my desk without it falling over. I can't sit in my chair without it breaking off. And it just makes me upset that it seems like no one cares about Baltimore City Public Schools.
Josiah Richardson, Brandon Stevenson, Morgan Turner-Cohen, I really appreciate you being students in our school system, the work you do, and you're really great. And I'm glad you did what you did and get these pictures out. Thank you so much for coming in the studio today. It's been great to meet you all. Khalila Harris, thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you.
Baltimore Freedom Academy Executive Director, and Frank Patanello, who is an education advocate for ACLU. I'm glad we finally got in the air with some good stuff here together.
Thanks, Mark.
Good to have you. Thank you so much. We're going to have a very short break and come back. And before we get there, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. Over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com. We'll be right back and talk about something taking place in Sandtown that you wouldn't think is there, and it's very important. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to talk about something going on in Sandtown that when I first heard about it, I was just really happy because I've always said, you know, why doesn't somebody open like a really good supermarket or a really good restaurant or a really good coffee house in an inner city neighborhood? Why does it always have to be a mess? Why can't we do things that make people feel good about their lives and world? Well, it is happening in a place called Sandtown. Before we introduce our guests, what we're going to do is play for you a segment that we did for Urbanite Radio Stories that Justin Levy produced as a slideshow and audio show. We're going to play the audio portion about what we're talking about this hour, and then we'll come back to meet our guests. So listen up to this, and we'll be right back.
is as a leader. Hopefully one day one of the younger guys here might look up to me and maybe want to do the same thing, you know, become a leader in their community.
I'm Antoine Bennett, part owner of Gary's Goods. Also, I am co-executive director of Nissan Urban Ministries.
Specialties would be probably caramel macchiato and the steamers, yeah, and the smoothies. A lot of people would be excited to actually watch you make it, I mean, just by hand. You know, it's not like at Starbucks, it's an automatic machine. You just push, pull down, hit a button, and it's done. You know, you actually make it by hand, so everybody's pretty excited about that.
When you walk into a corner store, the first thing that greets you is generally a 8-foot-high, you know, 1/4-inch-thick set of plexiglass, bulletproof glass, with turnstiles and little holes in it that you can speak through. We really wanted to get past that. You know, the life of our cashiers is the same as the life of our customers. You know, we're all going to be safe or we're all going to be in danger. And we just felt like we could build on the fact that we grew up in this neighborhood. We have more friends, way more friends than we do enemies. Folks who know the community extremely well question why this intersection, which is an intersection that's historically full of triumph and tragedy, and in most cases more tragedy than triumph. In recent years, you know, young men have lost their lives on this very intersection. This is an intersection that has changed my life in many ways. You know, 20 years ago, you know, a man was shot by my hands on this very intersection. This is also the corner of our May Gary, that Gary occupied and served this community, this intersection, in a very different way, which he can delve into, you know.
Basically, I was once the drug dealer, the bad guy. That's what I considered was a bad guy, and you know, I was making sure I was the only one serving on the block. Like I said, I'm back now, and I'm serving in a different way. Every day I walk out that door, it's not just coming here just to open up a store. It's like this is what I have to do.
Recently, when I sat down with a close friend of ours, I said, "Hey, let me ask you a question, man. I mean, and be honest with me. I mean, do the fellas, you know, and he know what I mean by the fellas, the streets, you know what I mean? How do they view Gary and us?" In a nutshell, what he said to me, with a very serious look out of eyes, he said, "Man, are you kidding?" He said, "Man, we look at you as heroes. You guys are doing what we should be doing." That brought tears to my eyes, you know? Really brought tears to my eyes. If nothing else, the owners of Gary's Goods still got their street credibility.
That was a piece produced by our Justin Levy for our Urbanite Radio Stories series. And this is one of our Urbanite Radio Stories coming to you now. Urbanite Radio Stories on the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Baltimore Mediation, the first mediation firm in the state of Maryland, specializing in separation and divorce and business and workplace conflicts, located in Baltimore. Go to www.baltimoremediation.com. And that story features the folks who are in the studio with us now. Gary Palmer, who you heard there, is proprietor of Gary's Goods Coffee Shop in Sandtown. Gary, good to meet you at last.
Thank you.
Heard so much about you. Good to have you here in the studio.
Yes, you too.
Antoine Bennett joins us, business partner in Gary's Goods,
yes,
as well as co-director of the Noonsong Urban Ministries. Good to meet you. Great to have you here as well, man.
Yes, sir.
And also joining us is Patty Prasuta Rao, who is co-executive director of Noonsong's Urban Ministries. And Patty, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you again for having us here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Number here is 410-319-8888. You know, when I first heard this story, I mean, I really, it just, years ago when I was working near Rose and Ashland, there was this empty store, and we kept talking and envisioning this empty store as a place that could be a coffee house and nice place to buy fresh vegetables and come in and something really different for an working class inner city neighborhood, but nobody even thinks of those things. Tell me about how you came up with this idea. I mean, putting, like, as I was joking, like, it's like Starbucks in the hood, you know what I mean? But it's different because it's yours. So tell me, Gary and Antoine, how you came to this place to create this coffee house in the middle of Sandtown. Go ahead, Gary.
Okay, Mark. Well, Gary's Goods kind of started with me growing up in Sandtown with three older guys owning a regular little convenience store. And like I said, as I was growing up, just where we hung, me and all my friends. I did know, you know, the older guys personally, and like I say, it was not one, it was three. So the store kind of, you know, I didn't know too much about business. I was young, and the store didn't last long, but I knew all three owned the store, you know, but the time that they owned the store, you know, that's where I played that. So just growing up, that kind of stuck in my head.
But you spent the business you were in for a long time was a different kind of business.
Yes.
On the street.
Yes. Well, reaching out, I mean, speaking out.
Yeah.
You know, about that story. Yes, Mark, as you know, I was the bad guy. I was the bad guy, and on the corner where Gary's Goods at was my location. That was my spot. That's where, you know, me and the fellas
sold what I had to sell.
Did what I had to do.
Yeah, right, right.
And I pretty much made sure nobody else sold nothing there, you know? And
now he's serving in a different way.
Now he's serving in a different way. I mean, one of the things we've always heard in the best programs in the city, that even 30 years ago when I was working in them, that at the heart of all the dealers in the corner is a businessman waiting to erupt.
Yes.
You know, somebody waiting to create a life, but that this is how it's interpreted. Antoine, Bennett, tell me how you two got together and how you are involved in this.
Well, I guess in a nutshell, Gary and I grew up together. He's a little older than I am. I consider him a generation ahead of me. But he always, as he did many of us, took me under his wing. And so we had the opportunity later in life to both of us change our lifestyles. And so we were more focused in working and having that in common. We had the opportunity to work at a place called Eden Jobs together. Where we're helping folks with their employment needs, folks who were neighbors, residents who were in between work. And so I initially was hired on Eden, and then Gary came on shortly after. And so growing up together and then working together, and then now ultimately owning the store together, even though he's 51% and I'm 49%. My voice is still here.
That's close.
Well, to say, Mark, you know, Antoine growing up underneath of me, you know, he actually became my boss at Eden Jobs. that was a sight to see, man. You know, being best friends and growing up together.
And you're older than he is.
And then he becomes your boss.
And I, you know, I guess one of the things, well, before I come back to the store, because I really want to kind of ask you some questions about the store and the community's reaction to what you sell in the store. But Patty Prasad Rao, talk a bit about New Songs Urban Ministry and the role you play in all that and with all this.
Sure. New Song Urban Ministries actually is the community development arm of New Song Community Church. And New Song began back in 1986 when some residents in the neighborhood partnered with those who had moved in and began a church, and after that just began to address the needs of the neighborhood. And over time, New Song has actually come to be a comprehensive, holistic work in the neighborhood, of the neighborhood, by the neighborhood, and it's addressing needs of housing, education, healthcare, jobs and job development, substance abuse, and community arts. And out of that program actually is where Gary's Goods actually birthed. So New Song Urban Ministries has a commitment, as we've addressed all those other needs of neighborhoods like ours all around the country, the thing that was missing was economic development. And really understanding that the life and health of a neighborhood, while you need to address those other things, you also have to address the economic issues. And so New Song was really committed to that, wanting to see businesses in the neighborhood return back again. After the riots, after Martin Luther King's assassination, businesses left and they never returned. Sandtown was once a thriving neighborhood, urban neighborhood. So we're really committed to that.
But Sandtown, it was thriving, but even as a young man, I remember Sandtown in the mid-early 60s. It was a tough place. It's always been a tough place.
That's right.
One of my closest buddies grew up there, Billy Bull. I mean, it's always been, I know the neighborhood before it became the Sandtown to look at. And so those houses were built, but it takes more than, as you were saying, Patty, housing to change a neighborhood. So, I mean, how did you financially get started to open up a coffee house in a neighborhood like Sandtown? Because I can see most banks going, coffee house, Sandtown, Blackport neighborhood? I'm not putting money in that.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely an untraditional route that we had to go. And all I can say is I'm grateful for New Song for being involved, not just with technical assistance, but helping us to really map things out in a very productive and strategic way, even up to today. You know, we did not have traditional funding. We have what we consider goodwill funders, individuals who buy into the concept of, you know, two young black men from their neighborhood wanting to own their business in their
neighborhood. So people invested in your company?
Yes, as funders, as loaners. We have that as a part of our strive as well. It's not just about having a store to succeed and impressing the neighbors and being a role model for the kids. We have folks who are invested in us, and we want to make sure we honor their name and their trust in us to have a successful business.
And New Song owns the building in which Gary's Goods is housed.
Mm-hmm.
So New Song, as a nonprofit, was able to raise money as the developer of the project. There was a huge investment into the redesigning and reconstruction of that building to the tune of $275,000.
Mm.
And we were really blessed to have a donor who was willing to come alongside of us, actually a number of donors, including the Baltimore Development Corporation from the city here, mm-hmm. right in Baltimore City, some church partners, some individuals. And we, as a result of that, were able to get the building straight and beautiful. We want you to come by and see it in person.
I want to see this.
Yes.
Justin obviously been on there because he did the story, but I've always wanted to come down and just have a cup of coffee and sit and look. So, I mean, I'm curious about, I mean, just that, again, I'll just put stuff on the table. It's very frank. Most people say, oh, you know, like coffee house like this. I mean, it's not something that people in the neighborhood are going to want to go to. They're not going to want to get a frappuccino or a cappuccino or, you know, a smoothie. So talk about that transition too, though, about people's response to the store and your relationship with the community around all that.
Well, I can, if you don't mind, Gary,
talk
to that. Well, actually, coffee houses and a place where folks can go get coffee is not totally new to a community such as Sandtown.
Right.
I remember my grandmother speaking about, in days of old, about Busy Bees, which was a coffee house lunchroom where the neighbors could walk there and enjoy a cup of coffee and a nice sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally not new to the community, but maybe so more so to the generation that's there now.
This is interesting because people forget in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, there were a lot of black entrepreneurs who owned businesses in the neighborhood, and we totally forget about that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Antoine.
And, but at the same time, so we're bringing something sort of nostalgic back to the community for those who are our seniors and something new to those who of more of our generation. But also, I think it's important for folks to know that we have decided to stick to traditions as well. And one of the traditions for, as it relates to businesses, is that we have convenience stores on these intersections. And so we have what we consider a hybrid business. Up front is our coffee shop where individuals can come in and get their drinks, hot drinks, cold drinks, smoothies, fraps. And then in the back section, we have a split level. They could just go a few steps up, and they're in the snack section. And you will find your Snickers and Mr. Good Bars and your Doritos and all of those things, including our Coke products that we carry. And you know what? The wonderful part about it is something for everybody in our community, you know, and those who are visiting our community. So we hope to see you there, Mark.
I do want to come down there. So in you both live in the neighborhood, right?
Yes.
And it's just, I mean, I'd like to talk to you about just how it feels for the both of you as you kind of step out your door in the morning and know what you're about to do that day.
Oh, man, you can only...
Gary Palmer.
Yes.
Yes.
Just stepping out, you know, it was 5:50 in the morning.
5:50 in the morning.
5:50 in the morning.
Okay.
Walking down a half a block, you know, to the store.
Mm-hmm.
That's how far it is from, you know, my house. And
just a half a block.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. That's good. I like that.
Just a half a block.
Yep.
Yeah, just walking down to the store. It's just... It's not like I say, it's not a job. It's something like, it's just God's work, you know, for me. It's
a wonderful feeling, actually.
Definitely. Definitely wonderful feeling.
I mean, it's an interesting dynamic that you bring to this. I mean, you both bring to this. Yeah. I'm thinking that somebody who, There's a line I use all the time when I think about these things and talk to people in different communities, is that there's nothing more powerful than a thug who has turned to peace.
Go ahead.
You got to remember that one more.
You know, yeah. And it makes me think of you, and things. Think what you just told you a story about how you had that corner, and the corner was yours.
Yes.
And you were bad, and said, "This is my corner," and you made sure that stayed your corner.
Yes.
That's a deep transition to make between coming from there to opening a store that services the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, Mark, you know, you have so many friends, you know that you call friends, and they, you know, constantly dying and getting locked up, and you know, you're the last man standing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the transitioning point, you know, was for me. You know, I couldn't take no more. So that's where that was the turning point for me in my life.
So the respect in the community you have is from maybe the little guys in the corner, but also from the parents and grandparents who see something trying to change.
Almost certainly. Most definitely. The community support, the level of community support has been tremendous. It's just a wonderful feeling, as Gary and I said, to be able to walk to your destination that happens to be your dream. What we didn't mention is Gary's Goods is a vision of Gary. It's just not a happenstance. It's a vision of Gary. It was the tool that he wanted to give back to the community, both as a man that's still in the community as well as a man that's striving to be a role model for our kids in our community. And so to be able to enter work with a purpose like that in a place you call home is... it's a wonderful feeling.
So, tell me, Gary, how did you come up with this idea about the kind of that kind of coffee house in the community? Where did that idea come from?
Well, it's not a long story.
Okay,
but you know, I was trying to make it short as possible. You say, how did I come up with the idea?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I can see somebody saying we're going to start a restaurant, we might start a convenience store, we might start a launch, but you're talking about taking a kind of a classy coffee house.
Oh, yeah, it's real classy.
You know what I'm saying? So, tell me how that came about.
Well, actually, I wanted to start out with balloon and card store.
Uh-huh.
You know, cards and balloons sell every day. So, I talked to Antoine and... You want to elaborate on that?
Sure, I can help out with that. One of the benefits of being with a part of New Song, even mm-hmm. though Gary's Goods is a personally owned and operated business, but we're part of a larger picture. And one of the pieces in the picture is that we have 10,000 volunteers that come through Sandtown Habitat for Humanity, which is a program under the New Song banner. We have a school which house 140 mm-hmm. plus students with parents and teachers. And so having these type of pictures or these pieces in the picture, we wanted to have something for not just the residents of the community, but something that, you know, these respective people could enjoy as well. And although we initially thought about cards and balloons, we had a potential partner that was looking at or have a coffee business down in Muncie, Indiana. And they were friends with Alan Tibbles, who's one of the co-executive directors. So we massaged the idea of possibly having a coffee shop, along with, we knew we wanted to do a convenience store. But we massaged the idea of having both. And so we thought it would be a great idea. And again, knowing that the community once had a coffee shop, we just wanted to explore it, and we thought it would be a little something for everybody.
Now, what else is being planned for Sandtown beyond, I mean, are there other businesses and ideas being planned for Sandtown that...
Well, we hope that Gary's Goods is going to be the first of many. Mm-hmm. Right. And the New Song model is actually an entrepreneurship model. So New Song does not own the business or have any right in the business. What our desire is to help other neighborhood residents be trained in entrepreneurship skills and be able to help open up another number of other businesses. New Song currently owns a number of other buildings that are corner buildings, and so we are beginning the process now for our strategic planning, how to select the next business owner, how to help them be trained and develop
the property.
What
do you think the neighborhood needs? Grocery stores, supermarkets? What do you need in Sandtown? What do you think needs to be built there next?
Well, you know, Gary's been an inspiration to many. So as soon as Gary's Goods open, there have been people coming all over saying, I want to be the next one. I want to do what Mr. Gary is doing. So we've had ideas for a pizza shop, a restaurant, a card and gifts and balloons place, a diner, even a nails and beauty hair salon. All of those things right now are needs for our neighborhood. Unfortunately, most of the money that you can spend is spent outside of Sandtown. So everyone has to leave the neighborhood to do and get any of those things we mentioned.
If those things, if those kind of stores were in your community and community residents owned the pizza parlor or owned a small, healthy grocery store or owned whatever it could be, how would that, what does that do for the neighborhood? The money stays there and people in the community who live there on these businesses. How much do you think that does?
Well, it definitely would keep the money in the neighborhood. Forgive me for cutting you off.
No, no, that's fine.
And you would see those dollars recycle in the community. And the spirit that we have as residents of Sandtown is I could easily see a business owner a year or 2 years into having their business in the community, sponsoring a lower league baseball team or a basketball team. Gary and I sort of dreaming here. We would love to have success through Gary's Goods to the extent where we're co-sponsoring a Habitat House in the future. In the future, more so than the near future. But, you know, it's that type of dreaming.
Right.
We feel like the sky's the limit.
The other thing that is happening, I think we see it already with Gary's Goods. Gary's Goods has become a gathering place, a place of pride in our neighborhood. People trust the store because they know it's run by Gary and Antoine. And we don't need the plexiglass because we've got Gary and Antoine. There's a trust relationship, and there's an ownership in it where you can see the children. This is our store. And I think that there are some benefits to neighborhood-owned businesses that are intangible.
And what you just said right now, one of the things, psychological things about living in communities, in certain communities, is that the plexiglass. Walk into a store where it's walled off, where the people who own the store and the goods are walled off from the people. You can't go around and like, pick something up and put it down and look at it. You can't like shake somebody's hand or have this intimate interaction. I mean, that it almost feels like you're in a prison.
Yeah, it feels bad. It feels real bad. You know, I can, you know, speak for me and Antoine right now. I've grown up, you know, in Sandtown with, you know, plexiglass all over. It's a bad feeling, you know, when you can't grab your own items. You can't see, you only can see a date until somebody gives it to you through a little box window, you know. So a lot of people feel really unappreciated.
Yeah, and I think the message is for us, and excuse me for cutting you off, Gary, is that a lot of folks want to know why didn't we choose plexiglass. We want to say that we wanted to reignite that human element. We're not anti-safety. We're anti-plexiglass, and I think that's an important message.
This has been a very important conversation to have, and I want to thank Patty Pursuto-Ralph for joining us in this conversation, and Gary Palmer, Antoine Bennett, who own Gary's Goods Coffee Shop in Sandtown. What's the address again?
1500 Pressman Street, where everything is good at 1500.
All right. So I'll see you all at 1500 Pressman Street.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having us.
Thank you all for being here. Congratulations.
Thank you
so much for what you're doing. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite explains a new movement in architecture and design, debates the downsizing of Baltimore City, and offers an in-depth look at the state's biggest transportation project. It's The Building Issue, available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers, Justin Levy, were engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Devin Finley. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.